Blog Talk Radio. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
You're on the Tony Pennant account.
I'm going to come at you live with another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show, live recorded, that is. But that's only on a 3-hour delay, so it's going to be dim. And we're going to be having a special guest on tonight, Joe Lazon. And he's famous for, of course, being the guy to pretty much demolish Jens Pulver. His legacy in the UFC and just, plowed his way to the top. And he's been one of the most famous local fighters next to Kenny Florian, who just beat him in the grudge match. And, of course, it's good to actually friends, but they're always at the local events, and I see him all the time. But it's always nice to have him on the actual show here. And had a brief interview with him just before the Kenny fight. But other than that, I didn't really, talk to him that much. I let him, mingle with the fans and let him do his own thing. He's usually coaching a lot of fighters at those events, so I know that he definitely just doesn't think about himself, so it's going to be interesting talking about the whole New England scene with him and, knowing that I've seen a lot of those fights and know a lot of the guys that he's working with. So Tony will have to sit back and glory, be in all his glory in the first half an hour or so here when we talk boxing. Actually, I think we don't even have him until 9. I gotta double check that time.
Well, Rich, I know, especially with you and the, it kind of goes both ways, when I introduce, or interview, I should say, any, doctors at the Philly area, we have guys like, Cameron Hanglumby on, Simon Carr, Chuck Mazzaccio, Steve Cunningham. I know you can't get a word in otherwise. I've got these guys on, I'm just sending me emails like, Tony, you please be quiet so I can answer the question. Two of the three games, we have like a 16-12.
a game one time, and I turned to my buddy just as a joke, and I go, I bet you a quarter this guy hits a home run. And it wasn't somebody famous for the Red Sox. It was just some, you know, regular hitter that didn't even hit that many home runs. And boom, he hits one. It was like two pitches later, too. It was bad. I was like, holy shit, I can't believe I did that. And so, anyway, you know, he didn't give me the quarter, but... But it was a 1-0 game. That was the only run of the game, and Pedro was pitching, I think. It was the only time I got to see Pedro pitch live. So that was a good game.
What the hell was the game? It was like 1-0 just ended on like a walk. What the hell? Which, you know,
what was that game? What game was that?
It was, I forget who it was, but it was like, it was 1-0 on a walk or a sacrifice fly in the 8th inning. Like, oh. What an offensive outburst there.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that happens every now and then. That sucks. But anyway, yeah, it should be good. Fenway's nice, and it's supposed to be nice weather. Looks like partly cloudy in the morning and then sun in the afternoon, so that changes
yeah.
too.
I've got about 70 degrees, so that's cool. Well, we're recording our live to turn the show.
Where, there? At Fenway Park?
Yeah.
We might as well.
I've got my camera, we'll do a recorder on it, we'll do a little... I just want to make sure, because the last time I did a taped recording at a sporting event, I was at an Eco Creek party last year, and we were drinking beforehand, then I was walking inside with two of my drunk friends, and I saw they were recording things. We go over there, and we ended up recording a online commercial for not drunk driving.
Yeah, we could use it as a promo, too, for that show. And that'll be nice. That'd be a good way to do it. And then we'll have the video, and I'll bring my little tape recorder, too, so that when we start the show next week, we'll just we'll play the tape. You'll be able to hear us. And then, you know, when we publish the episode, we'll have the URL on the video so people can go there to the full episode. You gotta start promoting the site and that kind of shit more often. I'm really trying to get the Google Ads up and all that other stuff. And I got this new thing I haven't even implemented yet. There's a betting site doing something promo around UFC 100. So I gotta get those affiliate ads up and see if those make any money. We'll see.
That's UFC fight. I think what UFC 101 is gonna be in Philadelphia.
Is it? I don't know. I don't know if they've made that decision.
I think UFC 101 is going to be in Philadelphia from Kobe Center. Because they're like, hey, boy, you have a week. We're going to throw out the first pitch when they were announcing it.
Right.
We played one of the best. I have one of my friends. He's a big MMA fan. Most gullible guy in the world. You know, I can tell him what, you know, I'm an African and he's Hispanic. Can you believe it? Well, I'm talking to my old friends a little bit, and I'm trying to think of getting on the show. I might do something like this with getting 4 front row seats to be there representing the website. And my friend, this guy's cousin, goes, yeah, Tony says he's giving me one, and the other two, he said, you guys can decide between the other 6 you guys that would want to go, who would get them. And he said, I'm going, front row? I need to be stuttering. And my friend Lennon was gone for like 10 minutes, and then I had the front row seats. I'm like, Tony was all for her tickets. He said, oh, yeah, he doesn't want to go, and he's just doing the lunch.
Right. All right, well, I'm looking at the box track schedule, and we might as well get into it. And we have a female fight, did you know, if I think of the first one that jumps out at me. Holly Holm is fighting. Oh, yeah, a gigantic fly on my computer screen, and it's got hair on it. Holly Holm, 26-1 with 6 knockouts versus Duda Jankovic, 11-0 with 5 knockouts. And that's for the WIBA Women's International Boxing Association welterweight title. And it's in Albuquerque, New Mexico, put on by, I think it's got to be the Fres Quindo guy, Fres Caz Productions, isn't that it? That's what's going on there. Not really much on the underground. Saturday, Montreal Casino, Montreal, Quebec, for a 12-round welterweight fight between Antonin Dicarry, 21-0 with 6 knockouts, versus Victor Hugo Castro, 29-5 with 12 knockouts, and fighting for Cuba. This is for the WBO NABO welterweight title. And, interesting fight. And an 8-round middleweight fight on the undercard. Sebastian Demers, 27-2 with 10 knockouts versus Alfredo Contreras, 10-4 with 4 knockouts. And we have on Germany's EDF TV this Saturday, we have Jürgen Bremer, light heavyweight, 12-rounder, 32-2, with 26 knockouts of light heavyweight Jürgen. He's fighting for the EBU light heavyweight title against Antonio Brancalian, 32 wins also, but only 8 knockouts and 6 losses, 0 by knockout. Draws. He's won his last 6 fights in a row. And looks like Bremer has lost one of his last 6. Looks like we're going to have the classic light heavyweight boxer versus brawler, knockout artist versus strategist going on over there. And then we have another heavyweight 12-rounder. Looks like a really good one for the WBA Intercontinental Heavyweight title. Dennis Boytsov, 24-0, with 19 knockouts, versus Taras Bedinko, 26-2, with 12 knockouts. Good stuff.
Now being the WBA, WBC, IBM, and all that. Then they go like WBC.
Intercontinental super lightweight juice queen. You know, it's like, you never know what kind of beer room you suffer. You know, you never know what the hell with what anymore.
Well, you never know. It could be like the women's boxing collaboration instead of the World Boxing Council.
Tell me how much sense this makes, okay? Well, that's that same card. Has the ABF welterweight title between Saul Alvarez and Jefferson Luis Duncala. The problem is that NABF is North American Boxing Federation. Is North American Boxing Federation is Mexico considered North America?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's Central. Yeah. I'm like, okay, good, it is North America. Good. I don't want the North American Boxing Federation being defended anywhere but North America.
Right. Well, it's Canada, United States, and Mexico. Even though...
Okay, cool.
Even though sorry, Mexico,
I was just talking.
Even though it's technically borderline. But,
I could be right there, but not when it comes to geography.
Okay. But anyway, yeah, that's another mismatch. Actually, no, that's not really that much of a mismatch, but... there's all kinds of mismatches below that. The one other fight that's actually a decent matchup, it looks like, is the flyweight fight between Eric Ortiz, a six-rounder, between Eric Ortiz, 31-8, with 20 knockouts, versus Gilberto Quedas, who was 28-19, with 16 knockouts. But then you have a guy, Jorge Paez Jr., 21-2, with 13 knockouts, versus Jose Ramirez, 5-1. Although he does have 5 knockout wins. Rene Gonzalez, 24-1 with 19 knockouts. This is an 8-rounder at lightweight. Versus Eduardo Herrera, 0-3. Great job, Benjamin. Eric Ortiz, we already mentioned him. All right. And we have two other ones. Rodolfo Lopez, 20-4 versus Pablo Polanco, 0-3. So, and then there's, finally, there's a 1-0 guy versus a 1-1 guy. That's like the only real good match. That's ridiculous. That's what's going on in Mexico. There's another good card. Actually, there's an actually good card, I should say, down in Sonora, Mexico. With the top fight on that, Alejandro Valdez, super bantamweight, 10-rounder, 20-3. Valdez, 14 knockouts versus Gennaro Camargo, 24-6 with 17 knockouts. And we have a 10-round flyweight fight between Hernan Marquez, 21-0 with 15 knockouts versus Carlos Benuelos, 12-7 with 7 knockouts. So it's going down in Mexico. Oh, David Haye was injured, right?
Yeah.
I didn't hear about the injury, but I did, I mean, the specifics, but I did hear about the whole John Ruiz trying to put his fucking neck out and, get a shot.
Well, Klitschko should have known he was fighting Ruiz, you know, not at all. He didn't blame him.
No. Shut him up.
But I think Klitschko said the only two guys that you really consider would be pretty much a guy out who ran his fight with Nikolai Valdez canceled last week. And do you even hear why? Because I heard of something about a failed test. But he wouldn't say what it was. The WTA wouldn't allow him to be said what it was. And they were calling Valdez a coward for not taking the fight. And it was a giant failed test. But I'm like, look, obviously it would be an HIV because it's like a blood tester. I don't know what was wrong. But I don't know why. Valdez just wanted to say, okay, points off, and I should be declared champion. Mm-hmm. Now, Klitschko mentioned fighting Chris Lechugado or Chris Arreola. Names he mentioned. But then I read a report today that David Haye might still be in the mix. He might only postpone it for 3 weeks.
So what's his injury?
David Haye?
Yeah.
Back when he was middleweight champ about 8 years ago. know, Hopkins had the IBM title, and I think Holmes had the WBC title. And through the press conference, Hopkins was looking for a reason to talk shit. And he comes to find out that Keith Holmes is strictly vegan. You know, no meat, no animal products, no chicken, no milk, no eggs, nothing like that. And Hopkins hears about this, and he gives him a look at the press conference and goes, well, what do you eat? And Holmes looks at him and goes, I generally eat tofu. And Hopkins starts laughing at tofu. He goes, son, you're going to be fighting me. You better start eating some iron and nails and hammers. Because I'm going to beat the shit out of you. And then Hopkins went out there and beat the shit out of him. Well, there you go. I never understood. I had a nice dinner tonight about speaking broadly. I never could understand how that vegetarian could get. So, I remember we were talking to a guy last year who was strictly a vegan. And our good friend, Hella House, started making fun of him.
Yeah, I actually, I don't know, if I was going to be a vegan, I would start eating those pineapple turkey things. Like I don't know if I mentioned those on the show yet, but they sent me some. And I don't know about those jerky.com guys. I think they just want me to do free reviews for them for cheap stuff. I don't know if they're going to be a committed sponsor ever. But, you know, I'm trying to put the hooks in them. And so I did the review on that. But yeah, it was actually really good stuff. It was kind of like... You know, you get like a little slice of pineapple and you prolong eating that for another 5 minutes that it would take you to normally eat a slice of pineapple. You know, usually, you know, a couple bites, you're done. But you know, when you have pineapple jerky, you got every bite, you got to really chew it. And it's good for you. You know, and it's not like, outside, and then you get that real hardcore part in the middle, and that's like almost like chewing gum. You get that going, and it tastes great all around. Unbelievable product, but I never thought I would like it. It's one of those things like pineapple jerky, but it's good.
I'm saying that, but I'm actually, my nose is just a little bit, my nose is a thing, but, my brother, I'm fucking no way out.
George Foreman III is 0-0, and Weaver is 0-1, with one knockout loss. So hopefully, little George, or big little George, since he's a heavyweight, will do well. We'll see. We see the next new, next generation heavyweight champion. This could take a while, of course. But, this just might be a hobby thing, too. I know that one of George's daughters boxed. I think she only had a couple fights, but this is the son now. One of the Georges. I think there's like four of them. But one of them is boxing now. So we'll see what happens there. Then we go to Saturday down to Manoman, Minnesota, with the Shooting Star Casino. John Hoffman, Minnesota Boxing Commission. We got a bunch of other short fights. Light heavyweight, six rounds at the main event. Christopher Holt, 15-9, nine knockouts versus Jonathan Korn, 47 wins and 21 losses, 26 knockouts wins. Find some other stuff here. Some slim pickings this week. Maybe a big week to take it. Baseball. Yeah, that's it. Until Thursday, we have another mismatch here worth mentioning over in Abruzzo, Italy. Super featherweight six rounder, 26.
What's that? Oh,
Abruzzo. Oh, Abruzzo. Oh, sorry. Anyway, Alessandro DiMeco is 26-6 with 14 knockouts. Fighting Luigi Mantegna. He's 0-14. Good stuff. The only fight on the card, too. Well, until next week, that's really all that's going on in the boxing world. In the mixed martial arts world, interestingly enough, we do have a couple big stories that I wanted to mention. Number one, I guess, is there's a couple big stories that have the same topic, but the Ultimate Fighter next season. I know that there have been some stories about the episodes on Spike TV there not getting as much play as they used to. Ratings have been going down. And now, interestingly enough, I think this is the first time it's happened, but they have two coaches, and one of the coaches has been on there coaching before, Rampage Jackson. And it's probably Rampage and Rashad coaching. That's one big part of the story. But the second big part of the story is Kimbo Slice is not apparently going to be boxing.
He's kind of trashing him.
Right, but he did say he left it open. Yeah, he did. If Kimbo wants to come fight for the UFC, he's going to have to fight his way through the Ultimate Fight. And he'd lose, he said. So, apparently, That was the stipulation, and Kimbo accepted. Looks like he just didn't have what it took to be the boss. Maybe, actually, I was thinking about this, and funny, you always mentioned the beard thing, about why he couldn't be a boxer. And I'm wondering, maybe that was a factor in him not becoming a boxer. Maybe he was already ready to go, and they said, you better shave the beard. And he was like, what? You never know. It could be a Tony Pinnacle exclusive right there. It's all about the beer and the paper. That's what he told me. It's all about the paper. So he wants to win. Obviously, there's no Zion's contract to win, so I don't know about that anymore. As if it ever was. But anyway, he's going to fight his way through the house. And I tell you, that's going to be a great show to watch just for the house. You know, Kimbo being in the house, never mind the fights. Can you imagine him living with Kimbo? Never mind, you know, watching him fight and all that shit. But, like, being in the house with Kimbo? I mean, it's going to make the destruction scenes that much better, too, because you know he's going to be punching holes in walls. Walking around with a 40, you know, in a bag. Trashed shit. That's going to be awesome. No, but Kimbo's fairly quick drinking, so surprise a lot of people. And he's not going to go for that, those theatrics and stuff. But I guarantee you he's going to come up with some funny shit in the house, in addition to, you know, whatever he does in the ring. That's going to be exciting. Because I don't think a lot of people give him any credit, you know, because this guy did, you know, take it seriously when he started out. He was working hard at it. And, you know, he had a little of it go to his head, obviously. And he probably took it easy, kind of like Tyson versus, Buster Douglas had his moment of weakness. But, you know, everybody has their bad days, and MMA is such an unpredictable sport. Maybe that's why he thought he had to go to boxing, because he knew his strength was on the feet. And, you know, he didn't have any of that other stuff. And, you know, he just got caught, but who knows. Anyway, make a long story short, he's going to be in the house. And it's going to be an episode, a season to watch, definitely, just for that. And I don't know who else is going to be on there. That's probably going to be, it's either out there already or coming out in the next few days, but that's what's going on there. As far as the events coming up, let's go check out also, Fedor Emelianenko is going to be fighting Josh Barnett. I just put a bunch of stuff up for all that stuff on the blog. There's all sorts of things on news media plates. They had a big press conference the other day, and you know, they're helping that up big time. But that's quite an interesting league. Now you have... they have not only Donald Trump and Oscar De La Hoya wrapped up with them, but now Mark Cuban has come into the billionaire mix, I should say. I think he's a billionaire. But Mark Cuban's in on it now. He's going to be introducing some HDNet inclusion and that whole thing. So that's sort of interesting. But for as far as events, we have big Strike Force event going on this weekend. I'm going to miss that to go to the fights. Or actually, I'll probably end up touching it late on the free TV network here. But main event is Robbie Lawler versus Jake Shields. Both guys are really great fighters, real sluggers. A lot of toe-to-toe action. That's going to be the main event. And then Nick Diaz versus Scott Smith. Another couple sluggers, so that's going to be two incredible fights at the top of the list here. But then we have Phil Baroni is back, the New York badass, coming back from his suspension for steroid use in the Frank Shamrock fight. And he's fighting a guy named Joe Riggs, who I'm pretty sure is famous for being in the UFC before. Let me just click on his record here. This card is really stacked. I mean, there's a lot of good fights, a lot of great characters. Kevin Randleman versus Mike Whitehead. Tyrone Woodley versus Sal Woods. I really recognize other than that, but those top fights, I mean, it's just incredible stuff. Yeah, he's Joe Riggs has been in the UFC before. That's pretty much where he's got most of his fights. He's 11-9. Phil's last fight was PFC 10. Doesn't say when that was here, but I think that was still a while ago. That was in 2008. So that's when his last listed fight here. Was in California. And Phil's record is 11-10, so it's an 11-9 guy versus an 11-10 guy. And we'll see if Phil can get it together and be all natural, or whether he fails the next time. We'll see. He'll be on TV, so he's under a lot of pressure. But I did read something about Joe Riggs, and he's expecting Baroni to come in pharmaceutically enhanced. Baroni's a incredible character. I remember being on a couple conference calls with him and not wishing I had it all on tape, knowing they would never publish it on tape. He was just swearing left and right, talking about just really razzing, what's his name, Gary Shaw, Elite XC, talking about his Ferrari, taking a ride in his Ferrari or something, stealing his girlfriend, all kinds of stuff. It was just brutal. But let's see what else we got. We have Shuto shooting Disco 9 over in Tokyo, Japan. King of the Cage Legends in Winter Haven, California, all on Saturday. And we have, of course, the big World Extreme Cage Fighting 41, Uriah Faber versus, I should know this guy's first name, Brown. Mike Thomas Brown from Norwich, where I graduated, for the title. And Mike Brown defended his title once already against one of the other top guys and ruined him. And Uriah Faber got ruined by Mike Brown the first time around. Of course, if you've seen the commercials, he's talking about knocking his head into the second row. This time around, Brown is.
Yeah, of course. And that's what they're saying. Like,
no, that was the TFP number. Yeah, right. And interestingly enough, we're talking to Joe tonight in a few minutes here. And James Bulver, the guy he launched his career by beating pretty much into the stratosphere, he went after that. Jens is fighting a local guy, Josh Crispy, so we'll have to ask him about that. Josh has been in a lot of the fights that I've gone to with the fights down there in Plymouth, Mass. With full force, full contact fighting, I should say. They have all kinds of cards down there going on. Just an incredible young fighter, Josh is. He throws a lot of kicks. He's big on the feet, but he can also, you know, hang on the ground. And Jens is coming off a couple losses himself to Uriah, and he just can't do anything in that WBC. He just doesn't seem to be winning that much. But, you know, he's not going to retire. He's going to be there for a long time. He's going to keep going. God love him for trying. He's going to be fighting this young New England guy, Josh Crispy, from Massachusetts. And we'll see what he can do. We'll see if Josh can really become a headliner after this, which I'm expecting him to definitely do. I don't know what Jens Bulver has left in the tank. I know he trains like a madman, but and he trains with the Militich gym down there in Iowa. And we know from talking to John Wertheim how much of a tough guy Pat Militich is. But so that's interesting. We have the New England connection there and the connection to Joe. We'll definitely have to talk to him about that. And we're going to be calling him just in a couple of minutes here. But also on that card, we have Cub Swanson versus Jose Aldo, Kyle Pietz versus Charlie Valencia, Eddie Wineland versus Frank Gomez, Manny Gamburian, the UFC guy from the Ultimate Fighter back a few years ago. And he's fighting John Franchi, Donald Cerrone versus James Krause, Mike Campbell versus Anthony Pettis, and Scott Jorgensen versus Antonio Banuelos. And also rounding out, we have Rolando Perez versus Seth Dean. And then that's pretty much it for that. But Mike Brown is a Norwich grad, so I'm going to be rooting for him in the main event. And I'm not sure still, I haven't found out if he was on the wrestling team when I was, but or if he even wrestled while he was in Norwich. But I think I did see when Norwich was trying to get some money for their program, they did mention that he was a Norwich wrestler, so I think he was a Norwich wrestler. But anyway, he's going to be facing a different guy than the last time. I think Uriah's going to be coming in with a little bit more respect and awareness of how tough this guy is. Cage Legends, there's only three fights on that one. One's a main event, the five-rounder, Michael Westbrook versus Amadeo Viola. It's going to be for some kind of title up there. This is in Winter Haven, California. Or Winter Haven, Canada. Queen Chain Casino. Sounds like it could be in Canada. versus Joey Beltran, and Gabe Rivas versus Victor Valenzuela, also on that card. That's it for big MMA events coming up. Now let's get to the zone. Horn.
Hey, Joe. Hey, what's going on?
Not much. This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. And we got Tony on the line here, too.
All right. Hey, Joe. Hey, how's it going?
Okay, man. I'm
sorry. Doing good. Just getting out of the gym.
All right. So, do you have a good workout today? Just beat some folks up?
I really can't think of much because of my knee. So, I think I can think of my knee. But, you know, I'm not paying attention. But, you know, it's a little bit different.
So, actually, Tony and I were just talking about the mixed martial arts schedule coming up and, you know, the big event there, the WEC event this weekend with a local guy, Josh Grisby, fighting the guy that, you know, pretty much launched you into the stratosphere when you beat him up there, Jens Bolton.
Yeah.
So, what do you think about Josh's shot against him? Leg up on
you. No, right?
Inside.
No. I'm sure, you know what I mean? I'm an athlete to get to that level. You push real hard. I'm sure, like, there's a little bit of a break. It's kind of, you know, I'm sure it's just on my field. A bunch of the teams like work. You know,
oh, yeah.
In the day, they kind of love it. It's going to be good for them. The
Spike or whatever. And they're like, oh, I saw that guy Kimbo Slice, you know, they were reading about it, but they never Yeah, right. built like a runner. I'm not at all. You know, I'm just like absolutely miserable. But I can't let her outrun me. I gotta try and keep pace as well as I can, which is
miserable.
Yeah. So I'm talking to my chief master, 112 pound girl, trying to not weak or puny or whatever.
Yeah, actually, when I was in college to train for wrestling, I would do the cross-country season the season before. And one time, one of my other wrestling guys that was on the team joined the cross-country team. And the first meet, we ended up being pretty close in the race. And we're coming down the home stretch, and literally around the last turn, I passed him. And some guy that's just, like, standing on the field next to the track starts yelling at him. Doesn't even know him. He's from another team. You know, we're both on the same team, and he starts yelling at this guy. Are you gonna let him beat you like that? And he comes sprinting past me, and I mean, he was like 12th or 13th place or something. But boy, he was fighting for it. All of a sudden, it's funny. But it's good. It's good to run. You always have to have the. You always have to have that in the bag, the cardio. And I know that Dean has kicked people out of the UFC for. Just have a bad cardio day sometimes.
You could ask two guys that are super skilled, if they're both tired, it's like going to look absolutely terrible, it's going to look super sloppy, it's going to look miserable. You know, if you want to watch a fight like that with two guys, they knew about the fight. I mean, there's always times when someone takes a fight or someone knows the feeling or something. But if you knew about the fight, there's no excuse for being exhausted. You know, I mean, there's sometimes like when you push at a ridiculous pace, but, for the most part, you should not be that tired. This is what you know beforehand what you're doing, so you know you're going to prepare for. Just failing to prepare is pretty much everything.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think the UFC has in a little bit of a strength in, because they can do that. Not a lot of other leagues can afford to just cast off their people. And I see that Andre Arlovski left Affliction pretty fast after getting beat up by Fedor.
Yeah,
that's Fedor. I don't think he really has that much as far as tactical skill, but when it comes down to brute fighting, he's just vicious.
No, I think he's pretty technical too. I think that he just has something special about him. You know what I mean? It's like, you can see guys, guys that, were not a super technical wrestler, didn't work the hardest, but they just think always won. You know what I mean? They're just very, very good. And Fedor's got that, but that intangible, skill that you just can't see it, but he doesn't look all that strong, but like, the only you pull up side by side, and then he makes it, look dumb, good for a run. And I think he's very well rounded, learned hard, he's pretty strong, he's got great cardio, he's got a great mix of skills and attributes, and just he's tough to beat,
Yeah, there's something about that Russian mentality, too, it's growing up pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, this is a field, something like on the lines of, every time I look across the ring, I think of the poor times when my family didn't have food, and the man across the ring is trying to take food from my little girl, my daughter, and it's just like, how do you even try to not like a guy like that? Guy see, I grew up poor, this is my country, if I don't win, I don't have food, my little girl's not going to go hungry, how about motivation? You don't need any more motivation than that.
And what do you think of the chances of the UFC ever picking it up? Do you think that's going to happen, or is it hopeless?
I think it probably won't happen. The reason being, the UFC could offer the most money or anything else. Fedor is, larger than life in Russia because of Sambo, which is, it's basically jiu-jitsu submissions, whatever. But there's punches to the body, and I think to the head of your standard. And the UFC will make him sign an exclusive agreement where he can't do Sambo, if he fights for the UFC. They won't let him do it. And for him, he's not going to do that. It's like Michael Jordan, signing an agreement, to say he won't play professional soccer or something. I think he'll play professional soccer easily, but he can't play basketball. It's like he's not going to do it. For him, Sambo is way more important than MMA.
He wins the world championships almost every year.
Extra money, but he can't do Sambo. Just go on. The UFC will bend on it and let it do Sambo. I'd just be here already. but I don't think they will.
Yeah, actually, Tony and I were talking months ago about the whole Anderson Silva boxing match versus Roy Jones Jr. came up.
Yeah.
Yep. We were talking about that whole exclusivity thing. That's one of the things we, you know, and I think a lot of people knock Damon on, is that he's that exclusive. And obviously, there's reasons for that. You know, you want to have your guys be in full effect for your events, and you don't want a chance that happens in other events. But now that whole co-promotion, no way attitude, I think it's eventually going to have to crack at some point.
They've kind of got a monopoly on things, really. You know, they really don't have to. I mean, like, they've been very systematic about how they set everything up. I don't see them breaking on that anytime soon. You know, I think they'll be pretty good at it. You know, and the other thing the UFC does too, which, you know, you don't see as much, is the UFC puts a lot of money into producing their fighters. You know, whether it's through marketing or whatever, you know, like, you'll see way more, you know, ads and things like that for guys in the UFC than you will for, say, boxing or something. You know, because the UFC guys, you know, invest their interest in them. You know, they understand, okay, we have this guy for the next, you know, 3 years or however many fights or whatever. So we're going to put money into them, you know, because, like, they're almost making all the different fighters that are figuring out to push the brand. Whereas I don't think you have that as much as boxing.
Yeah, it is slipping a lot in boxing, for sure.
Boxing turning around, though, you know, like, I'm really glad to see, you know, some of, like, the more marquee fighters, you know, facing off against one another. I mean, that was kind of a nail in the coffin, you know, for boxing for a long time. It's like, you got all these stars, and they never, ever overlap. They never fight. You always see, like, I'm looking good, but until you never heard of them. And now we're getting, you know, awesome fights like Del Hoya, Pacquiao, and all these other stars. I think Mayweather's fighting Pacquiao next, I believe. July, I think, right?
Mayweather's fighting Juan Manuel Marquez. He took Pacquiao, two really close fights. The last fight was only decided by 1 point, and it was a split decision. Their first fight was a draw. And Marquez is a tough fighter. He's, you know, well schooled. He's tough. You know, he's got a decent punch to him. He's a good boxer. Mayweather might be shaped fast, but a lot of it depends on him coming back from a 19-month absence, too.
Knocked down by another, they have that kind of cue. So, I mean, for all kinds of spread, they have the entire sport, so, you know, that's why we see all these great fights all the time. So, you know, he can totally get into your fight. There's really not a lot of negotiation involved. So, you call him, hey, this is your next fight. Well, if you don't want to fight that person, you can sit and wait, but your contract gets extended. You turn down a fight, and they can't hold on to you until, you know, you fulfill the fight and you do whatever they want.
Well, you don't have any inside information on Chuck Liddell's future? Is there anything going on there?
No, I don't know. I mean, I think Dana said that Chuck, you know, there's going to be a retirement, things like that. And I think that Dana, before the last fight, Dana told him, this is the last one, he's going to show me something. And Chuck lost, and you know, whatever. So Dana's like, oh, that's it. You know, but I think we'll see Chuck fight again. You know, I really do believe Dana's going to look out for Chuck's best interest. You know, they would keep Chuck, you know, employed. They would keep him in the UFC. You know, they'd keep him busy, whatnot. But, you know, Chuck's a fighter. You know, unfortunately, almost all fighters go out, you know, get knocked out or lose. You know, because until you lose, you have no reason to go out. You know, keep on fighting. If you're winning, keep on fighting. You know, so it's unfortunate the way it is. But, you know, I mean, I would like to see Chuck die. You know, I love the guy. He's an awesome fighter. But, you know, it's like, I don't want to see him, you know, punch Chuck or anything else. And I think he's trying to get there.
Yeah, I noticed after the Rashad knockout, he kind of had, like, that look in his eye, like, he could get his confidence back. And he was a little
gun-shy. He could go on for so long because he intimidated guys. They put him up against a lot of grapplers. He didn't fight any super skilled strikers. He fought a lot of grapplers and turned him down. He was a master at defending takedowns because he had good wrestling background. He could knock people out. Tons of power in his one hand. But now he's fighting more sophisticated strikers, and the biggest, they're better strikers.
Yeah, I noticed a lot that, like, a lot of the old school guys, you know, the big names, you know, guys that have been around forever, have been having a lot of trouble against these younger guys who are more well-rounded because, like, Chuck Liddell relied a lot on his unorthodox angles in his punches, you know, and people just started to figure that stuff out. You know, now you get a guy like Lyoto Machida, who's all of a sudden got karate as his main discipline.
Yeah,
and it was funny how the UFC guys were talking about, well, you know, everybody's going to be joining karate schools, but when it came down to it, he knocked the guy out with hooks, you know? He knocked Rashad out with hooks. You know, there wasn't karate.
I'm dreading the fact that Lyoto just won because, you know, I hear people all the time tell me, like, you know, like, this is the kind of fun. They're like, oh, well, you know, I got a black belt in Taekwondo, I got a black belt in Kung Fu and all this stuff. A lot of people think that it's really the same as what we're doing. That, you know, people think that, you know, because they did Taekwondo until they were 16, they got their black belt, that they could really go and continue with, you know, professional fighters. And, you know, this is what they do. They put all their energy into this, becoming a better fighter. So, you know, I'm just dreading all the people, you know, most people say, oh, wow, I got a black belt in karate. You know, you can't really champion, but the way you really champion, you have to see the black belt in karate too. You know, it's just like, they can't just see, they don't realize that you've been doing this his entire life.
Other stuff too.
Yeah.
But,
on top of all, you do all the wrestling, you know, like you said, all the, you know, I'm sure you work with tons of boxing coaches and everything else. It's just, you know, people just don't, as I said, the common, you know, say, oh, right, he doesn't.
I mean, you could credit his karate with anything in that fight. It's just that, you know, I think Rashad refused to engage a lot of times because he was afraid of those kids. So
some of it's that awkward. You know, using your angles like that is constantly trying to make. He kicks up out of nowhere, you know, just using the awkward angles. It's just whenever you fight someone that's not what you're used to, like, just like you said, like, he's not even keeping, like, you know, correct boxing posture. He's got his chin up, he's got his shoulders back. It's just bizarre. It's just real, real tough to fight. Where else are you going to find someone that fights like Lyoto Machida? Lyoto Machida can find tons of boxes that would be Billy Rashad. But where is Rashad going to find Lyoto Machida to train with?
Well, speaking of guys that you train, I know that I've gone to a lot of the stuff down in Plymouth there, and, you know, a couple other things around town, and I see you always there with, you know, the usual crowd. Kenny's usually there at every event, too, and I see you training a lot of guys. What's that like, and who do you see in the New England scene that's going to be breaking out here soon?
The top of the list is Josh Kipokan, you know, Josh Christie. I'm always impressed with Josh every fight out. You know, there's a whole bunch of awesome players, you know. We're very, very fortunate to have such an extensive, you know, MMA circuit in the past. You know, it's just ridiculous how many fights are out. You know, it's fights almost every couple weekends. So some weekends there's two fights a weekend. It's just nuts. You know, I have probably 20 guys on my gym that fight. You know, I'm mixture of amateurs and pros. I love being a coach. I'm way prouder of, my guys winning, a local title than I was of any of my fights in the UFC. Way prouder of, probably one of the best things he's one of my guys, Tony Lee, but he just lost, I think, in the last summer card to a kid from down the key. But when Tony won his title, he took a fight on Chuck Norris up in New Hampshire. Fought a kid that was super tough, very good grappler, knocked the kid out. He literally got a call on Friday night and fought on Saturday. And I was way more proud of him for that win than I have been for any of my fights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was so happy for him. He stepped up on short notice. He took care of business. He listened perfectly. Did everything. Couldn't have done anything more perfect. It was just, it's such a different feeling, between, winning myself and having my guys win too. But I showed him that, or I helped him with that, or I helped make it possible. It's just so much more rewarding.
Yeah, I think that's human nature to want to be able to know. You pass something of yours on to someone else. That's actually one of my things I've always had for my entire life. Is always be thinking about, what are people going to think about me after I'm gone? I always said that in the back of your mind. That's always been I always wanted to have that as a life goal to be remembered as, a good guy.
Yeah. As far as my training goes, my day one to a conference, still training, the school I went to Bridgewater is actually, the two of us, we renamed the school and everything, the guy, completely changed my life, 100%, completely flipped everything. I went from, doing computers and anything else, and I took on this little hobby, and he just kind of guided me all the way to the top, to where I am now, and I just think about how much of an impact he made on my life. I can't even explain it, and, if I could just help out one person like that, one guy from my team, I would be, so happy just to kind of, trying to make that kind of impact on people is just an amazing feeling.
I think Gordon Hawkins, the old Marine colonel down there at VMI who coached me, had a lot to do with helping me just kind of change things. Because I came down there probably 30 pounds overweight, really boxing seriously ever, and just totally turned me around physically. And obviously, when you do that, you have to have a little bit of a mental background to do it. He was funny. He was the typical Marine Corps colonel out there running 3 miles out there with us with a cigar in his mouth.
you think about how much people like that have influenced and shaped life.
Yeah.
I mean, just your everyday thinking, not just wrestling or boxing or whatever, but just your everyday thinking. I became such a better person just because I'm around. So I'm surrounded by good people. It's such a kind of gratifying feeling to try and help people who are doing the same thing. To help them out. The fact that they want to do what I'm doing for them, it's just to keep going and going and going. It's awesome.
And how about your brother there, Dan? I mean, that's got to be pretty interesting working right alongside with him. I'm sure you guys work together at the same gym, right?
Yep. He's in my gym. We have a very interesting dynamic. We're always at each other's throats. And I think pretty much all brothers. I was joking. I saw that he's an X-Men Wolverine. X-Men Origins Wolverine a couple weeks ago. They came out. Basically, two brothers. They go on to another. They're each other's throats the entire fight. The entire movie. At the end, they come together and they help each other out. If anyone's going to kill you, it's going to be me. And I was joking. I'm like, that's me and my brother. It's 100%. When we train, we're trying to meet each other. We go really hard, way harder than we should go. It's just, he's the best training partner I can have. He really is, because he doesn't let me slack. Keeps me on my toes, keeps me sharp. I'm sure somewhere online, one of us is going to really seriously get to the other one, and maybe one of us got to pull out of a fight or something like that. But, iron sharp as iron.
I don't have any experience with brothers, but I grew up with three sisters, and they fought all the time. I fought with them. Yeah, one of my sisters was named Mary Jane, and her nickname around Dorchester was Manly Jane. So you didn't mess with her. She actually used to lift weights, and she was a tough girl. But I remember one time in high school, I actually taught her some boxing moves because I ended up boxing and learning a lot about that. My grandmother used to always tell me, one day you're going to kick her ass when you get older. Sure enough, I did. But I taught her one day how to box, and gone into a fight in school, and she was always never afraid of anybody. She fought guys, you know, whoever. Didn't matter.
I was fearless. Like, I'm a man, you know, like, we had seventh girl came in, which is, like, she came in with your kickboxer, and she kept getting in a fight at school. So we thought it was a girl. And a couple of weeks, no, she's fighting guys. Some guy. With the final shot, the guy was in commander, Jack, the fact that the guy was in commander, she got in a fight with some kid, hit the kid, basically knocked him silly against the locker, he slumped down, and we jumped in to break it up. But the kid got up and just over the top and knocked her out. So it was like, the girl was fearless. So then she came in, she threw a kickboxer up, she went and fought the kid again, and just like, the girl was absolutely fearless. You know, like, you don't mess with girls. You don't mess with girls at all.
Yeah, I found that out when I was young. It was a girl, Sinead O'Connor was her name. She was from her mother was in the IRA, and she comes over to our Catholic school. And that was the first girl I ever tried to mess with. And she pulled one of the moves where she just grabbed my wrist and, like, twirled me around and threw me across the sand out there.
I'll tell you, one of my funnier experiences, when I was doing boxing back in the day at Joaquin, we actually had a couple of the first girls in college boxing. Really dark team, and I helped train him a little bit. So now, as I was, I had two different gyms and fitness centers I would go to, and two girls would, train a little bit of boxing. But then, I would do some boxing classes there, and a couple of them joined me, like a cardio, like a timer, like a best active thing. And my mentality, I'm like a South Philly guy. I came in a real tough boxing team. I mean, we put out a couple guys who fought for world titles. So, I mean, I came, from a boxing competing mentality. So, those two girls have been like my classes. I was, really trying to teach, how to get on the bag and bang it, none of that, one, two, cha 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 shit. So, I eventually built a gym in my basement. This little girl just bugged me. She said, I want to start boxing. I said, why? And she said, I just want to learn how to get shape and defend myself. I said, okay, that's a reasonable cause. I was a trainer, it was casual at first, she was just doing it for fun. And then she told me she was starting to prosper into it, and I just started watching tapes that happened with it. I had stepped right after we had him on our show, Bitch Pass the End of DVD. She was watching that and getting into it, and Rock Marciano, she was getting into it, thinking to watch these old Italian guys, and she was really getting into it. Then she told me, she goes, I'm really liking this boxing. I said, why? She goes, because when I play Wii boxing with my boyfriend, I knock him out every time. Well, she actually, we had her on our show about 2 months ago. She talked about having her first fight, in about maybe 7 or 8 months. So she's still getting into it more and more, but she's also aware that it has to be pushed. So there's some things I'll tell her, I'm like, you're going to do this. Oh, come on, can we make a deal with our virtuals? When I just get 5 rounds in the bag, you're not going to push-ups. I'm tough. But here's another thing. I started one of my philosophies in the sport. Years ago, when I was still at Rock Haven, one of my former teammates was doing an internship at a community prison. And so he was having the boxing team come in and talk to some of the guys. They brought me in because I had gotten a little bit of trouble back in the day, and I could kind of relate to these guys. I was a kid, but I grew up more in the city area, and I grew up fighting a lot. So these guys could relate to me. And I told them, I said, before I started boxing, before I started competing, I wanted to prove to people that I was somebody. I wasn't a good football player. I wasn't a good baseball player. I really couldn't do too many things. I wasn't, a valedictorian. So I needed an identity, so I took it to the streets, and I needed to prove to people that I could fight, so I was always looking for a fight. So they kind of put me in the boxing gym, and first thing Dr. Cox did at Rock Haven was he had some of the veterans, beat me up in the ring. He put one of his All-Americans in there, kicked the little shit out of me, but I got up, and I didn't leave, and then I gained his respect, and I told him that, so I always had to prove like I was somebody. But boxing gave me a self-confidence where I didn't have to, go out on the street and prove anything to anybody. If I needed to prove something to you, you can just come buy a ticket and see me fight. That's all I had to prove to anybody anymore. And I said, doing stuff on the streets, and I realize it now, how ridiculous it was.
I talk to you, especially if I'm talking to teenagers, you know, trying to, you know, find themselves. I said, if you're angry, when you're upset, or, you know, I said, instead of going out and running on the streets, start fighting, gangbanging, or whatever, box. I said, learn to hit, I said, come hit the heavy bag. And I said, because that heavy bag will take everything you got until you're no longer angry. It will be there the next day waiting for more. It doesn't carry a gun. It doesn't have a posse looking to gain revenge. It doesn't hold grudges. It'll be there smiling at you the next day. And I said, I just couldn't let her train out. She came up to my house one time and she was mad about something. She was angry. So I started putting her on these drills on the heavy bag. And after about the third or fourth round, she said, you know, I'm not angry anymore. I said, well, tough. I said, you coming into my gym angry has now made me angry. And I will work you out until I'm not angry anymore.
Or you can have this girl, you know, kind of manly looking, you know, the great fighter, but she's non
right, but I mean, I think there's less of a demand for it in boxing. It's more of a big thing overseas than there is in the United States for in MMA, at least for women fighters. I always consider the fact that those girls are not just fighting for their win, but they're fighting for the whole class of women, you know, that are representing women.
They do a cardio so they're not looking like the girl that's tired and can't hack it. So they're doing rounds so, you know, they're doing it for the sport.
Yeah, Mike, I had a unique experience when I first started Fighting These Unlimited on MySpace. We actually did a lot of interviews with women fighters because I wanted to expose that more. And one of the reasons was when I went to Quincy High, there was a girl there who was the first varsity wrestler, female, in Massachusetts. And a girl named Laura Lee Summer, and she ended up being the first girl to wrestle for Harvard University, too.
Really?
Just a really smart, intelligent girl. I remember she showed up every practice, every day, every year. And, you know, she was a much lighter weight than I was, so I didn't really have to wrestle one of one or two times. But every time she fought, just like she was fighting somebody, you know, smaller than her. And I'll never forget the first time she won against me. You know, obviously, I had to be a male. This kid, you know, he'd gone to practices with these guys before, and this kid got beat up so bad, just on the regular. Never mind getting beat by a girl, but then he had a girl.
Oh, yeah.
She was great. She was tough. And she actually recruited like 10 girls to come to practice for a week.
Really?
It just didn't last a couple of years.
Yeah, it's
Yeah,
it's harass, you know, harass everyone, you know, like, I've never sold to my t-shirts, like, you know, at the fight. grade when I put him in school. You know, the kid's just merciless. He'll go out and be a Cheeto guy, you know, 7-year-old woman, doesn't matter, or a 12-year-old kid. They go, what's my teacher? They go, you don't want to split the little guys? You have money for ticket, but you have money for t-shirt. That's kind of messed up. I mean, the kid's, you know, marshal. Doesn't care why he's getting the pitbull.
Oh. And as far as the Twitter goes, I was just telling Tony that Tony La Russa, the Cardinals manager, just sued Twitter for an impossible.
Okay. You know what I really like about Twitter is the fact that it's updated information and it's short.
Yeah.
It's like 100+ characters. Get to the job.
It's a sign. Well, like, when something like that is popular, you know, we know for being in the Boston area here, the Boston Globe almost went out. And a lot of newspapers are dying because of these websites that are just, capitalizing on the idea that people want their information now, they want it short, they don't have time for bullshit. I don't know if you get it with a thing like Twitter.
I think like magazines, newspapers, everything, like newspapers can kind of get tangled because they're really magazines. It's like magazines can't do any kind of news, they can't do anything like that because the internet just they have to rely more so on like each article and things like that. It can't just completely change everything. You know, so something like Twitter is awesome because it's short messages. Like for me, like one thing I like, but I dread at the same time is like right when I fight because I'll get like thousands of messages between emails, MySpace messages, Facebook messages, like all this different stuff. And like some people like they just click like, oh hey, you know, great fight, you know, what's the arm lock, you know, something like that. It was jar and I don't expect you to reply. Sometimes it's not like a chatter reply to everyone. Sometimes it's real time. But then other people, they're writing like a book. If I pasted it for like Microsoft Office, this is like 20 pages. Like they will write me a long essay, and it's filled with questions. They expect me to answer it all. And but you can't do that. You know, it's like if they had sent, you know, Tom Brady, like they would expect you to reply. Like sometimes, but with Twitter, it's quick. Like quick messages, hey, how's it going? Hey, you know, what's your different website? You know, it's like, it's something quick like that, and I'm forced, like, I have to, you know, I'm kind of flawed because, you know, I'm limited to a short reply. They're taking that, like, you know, people only send me, like, a long message. I used to just give, like, a short reply, like, oh, I'm a little rich, you're going to reply back. You know, so for me, Twitter's awesome. It's short, to the point, it's pretty cool the way it works.
Yeah, I think, actually, it's like, if George Orwell was still alive today, it would be something
interesting. Okay.
Is to keep to use as few words as possible to describe, you know, what you're trying to say. So, you know, he obviously talked about Big Brother and all that, and technology taking over the world. But I don't think we're there yet. But it's definitely interesting to see something like that, like just the blogs. Just, you know, Dana, I know, has been in that huge thing with Loretta Hunt over there at ShareDog.
Yeah.
And I almost had to shut down completely his video blog because of all that blogs. But,
newspaper, but it came out like monthly or whatever, and they used to, you know, get press credentials, and the UFC right then and there stopped all those websites from getting credentials. Like, Sherdog was completely blackballed. It was dumb on their part, the UFC is really trying to do something, they're really trying to, try to push something, and trying to, we'll show them, we're going to spoil the whole thing.
And it just created this big, huge, feud between them, and
I don't even use Sherdog anymore, but when I had the whole thing going on with Zients and the lawsuit there that they've got still going in bankruptcy, that makes no sense, but they've already admitted that they're going to settle it eventually. But anyway, I use Sherdog a lot to put all that stuff out there, and I think Sherdog actually helped me break a record one day for hits on my site. I got like 86,000 views in one day, so it was crazy, but now I don't even use it because they've shut down a couple of my accounts for just, putting links up and stuff like that.
Yep.
They let other people swear and flame other people. But it was interesting how, over the course of that story as it developed, and as I started making progress and representing myself against them, they started supporting me on there. And, at the beginning, obviously, they were flaming me left and right because they thought I was, once they figured out I was for real and just trying to, put the spotlight on this and fix it. And they started, clapping me on the back everywhere, and, saying I was legit. Even some of the humor sites took notice, so it's kind of interesting. But that's a whole other story. But anyway, I just wanted to offer you a chance to let everybody know where you're at. You obviously mentioned Twitter. How do we find you on there? I'll add you right now.
Just Twitter. KOEWZON.
And you have MySpace and all that kind of stuff going on too, or
they use MySpace. The best way to find all that stuff is my website, just joelovon.com, joelovon.com, or there you can tell you all that stuff. Facebook, MySpace,
I'm lost in the fight to the UFC, that's good.
Pretty accurate, pretty keep up to the point.
Joel, I was telling Richard, so it's your world. I'm good, thank you. So usually with me, you're getting a lot of split fighters on here, boxers. We've had a kid come in, former cruiserweight champ, and some guys that had a personal trainer with. But I was talking with Richard, Richard said, I'm Massachusetts guy in here. We're going to have, I think, like 3 or 4 straight weeks of mass guys on here. We had, what was the name last week? It's Danny O'Connor, the fighter.
Yeah, the boxer.
And then I happen to stumble upon one this week. I'm coming up to Boston this week for like the first time ever. I'm taking my dad up to a Sox game. And I don't have any socks to go apparel to wear. And I don't want to wear anything to Phillies when I even play the Phillies. So I said, I want to find the Rocks Marciano t-shirt. And I stumbled upon the Rocks Marciano Foundation in Brockton. And I have a personal friend of Marciano's who's going to be on our show next week. I was talking about one friend tonight. I'm like, yeah, I got a big beginning next week. I'm like, you ever hear Ross Marciano? And the guy's like, oh my God, are you serious? I'm like, well, no, not him. He passed away about 40 years ago, but a friend is.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, it should be pretty cool. We've got plenty of Philadelphia guys on, too.
We've got a bunch of Philadelphia guys on here. So, Simon Cowell, Hank Lampy, and Mengo, and all.
I think one thing about New England guys in general, never mind just Massachusetts, but they're always Sorry, folks, the Joe Lozon interview got cut a little short in the recording, but join us next week, and we'll have another guest. And sorry for the dead air there.